Hey everyone, thanks so much, Ryan. So it's good to have you here. That's the name of the show, as Ryan mentioned, is somewhere around how to plug into the Microsoft sales machine and grow your business. In order to do that, you really need to understand what the machine is. So joining me is Arnie Mundlach. He's the director of ISV marketing and programs within the Worldwide Developer and Platform Evangelism team. So Arnie, welcome.
Thank you, Will.
All right, and you can maybe take us to the next slide and just kind of walk us through then, because this is, when I heard the title of this show, I was really interested. So what are we going to get today?
Well, in order to really understand how to plug into the Microsoft sales machine, you have to understand what the machine is.
Okay.
Anytime you learn something new, you start with what are the parts, what are the important parts. So we're going to start with how Microsoft is constructed, how we are organized. Then we'll drill into specific areas that are of most importance to the sales and marketing groups, and in order to understand how to plug into the machine. We'll also talk about how Microsoft segments its customers and how we go to market to those customers, because you have to understand that. And then we'll kind of connect the dots with some licensing that we care about, and then finally make some recommendations on how to have ISVs plug into the Microsoft sales machine.
That's fantastic. I think given our new direction and new strategy, it's hard enough. I'm a 10-year veteran, and I don't totally understand what some of the changes are. So if you're a partner, how do you work with Microsoft? This is great.
Yeah,
so.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So let's start. Let me go back.
All right.
So first, Microsoft is a very, very complex organization. It's a very cross-matrixed organization. Coming from the outside looking in, it can be daunting. But really, when you boil it down, think of Microsoft as three separate divisions. There's the engineering groups. They focus on building the products. There's the sales and marketing group. They are responsible for marketing and selling those products that are produced by the engineering teams. And then finally, I'll call it, we don't call it this internally, but we're calling it for this purpose, shared services. These are the groups that have common functions that service the whole machine of processing the engineering as well as the sales and marketing organization. Does that make sense?
No, so far so good. I know where I fit in those three pieces, in the field, sales, and marketing.
Right. So under engineering, these groups are organized by product families. And especially with the most recent reorganization that we went through, this is even more so. They're in common engineering functions and groups for the product families. And then within those groups, they're organized by role. Field sales and marketing, the first pivot is that they're organized by geography. Then they're aligned or organized by the customer segments that they're targeting with their sales and marketing efforts. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then finally, the shared services, things like IT, HR, legal, Microsoft Research, and then the most recent addition to this group is the global marketing team. These groups are organized by their function, their common function, and then their role within that. And then they're aligned to one of the engineering groups or one of the field sales and marketing groups. They're aligned by the support, but it's a dotted line relationship to those organizations.
All right.
So does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. So far, so good. I mean, I'm in sales, and I know that there's 13 regions and so forth and so on.
Right.
I think engineering has probably got to be one of the most profound changed orgs in some respects.
Correct. Yeah, there's two major changes that are especially impacting the sales machine. One is that the purity that we've now put in place with the engineering teams, and then moving the product manager role, the marketing function that was in those engineering groups, into more of a shared service function. But so let's go through each one of these in detail. We won't talk a lot about shared service. In fact, we won't talk at all about shared services today. But I do want to drill in just for a moment on engineering, and then we'll spend a bulk of the time on the field sales and marketing.
Yeah, I think the engineering is a good setup to then talk about sales. And to your point, shared service, more of a common denominator.
Exactly.
Yeah.
With one exception, and that's an important one, and that's the product manager role. So these are now the five divisions, groupings, if you will, of engineering groups that we have, and they're each led by an executive VP. You can see those across the top. The typical roles within the engineering groups then are the product manager. Now, for ISVs listening to this broadcast, product managers are the most critical role and the most likely role that they would interface with. ISVs, partners in general, likely won't have a lot of exposure or any opportunity to meet with a developer, a tester, or even a program manager within the engineering groups. So the product manager, think of a product manager as the role that's in charge of the 3 to 5 year vision for the product. They deal with pricing, how we license, what our channel strategy is, branding, all of those things. So that's a key role, as you can imagine, ISVs wanting to sell their product.
Sure.
The program manager is a really powerful position within Microsoft because the program manager is the one that is accountable to make sure that the software ships when it's supposed to ship. So they're kind of the master of the ship, making sure that the developers are meeting their schedule, the testers are meeting their schedule, that the product managers aren't putting in requirements that are unrealistic to obtain in a reasonable time frame. The developer, as you can imagine, is the hardcore developer focusing on certain aspects of the application. And then the tester is the person that's accountable to make sure that the quality bar is met before the product is shipped. So those are the typical roles. So based on that, and again, because of the product manager, who now sits in a more centralized organization but is still aligned to these engineering groups, what they care about are things like competitors. What are competitors doing? What are their release schedules? So any ISV that has insights on competitive moves, they'd be very interested in hearing that. Features, programs that a partner might interface with would be a good conversation to have with a product manager. They're very interested in driving early adoption of their latest version and creating early adoption programs themselves and encouraging partners to enroll in them. And then they love to hear customer feedback from ISVs on what's landing, what's not landing, what things customers are saying about their products versus the competitors. Those are the types of conversations that if you do have an opportunity to meet with a product manager, that they care about. Make sense?
No, it makes sense. I think the cadence that a program manager releases is speeding up dramatically as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So one of the things that we're going to talk about today is the key to understanding how to plug in is understanding how people are compensated. And that's always been kind of a black box mystery within Microsoft as well. So I just want to touch generally on how Microsoft employees are compensated. So for a comp plan for a typical engineering group and product manager is what we call a C plan, just a standard compensation plan. It's a range of pay based on levels, and you move up. Every job is assigned a level, and you can move up levels. That's a promotion. There's an annual raise that they're eligible for every September 1st. It's paid out September 15th, and it's based on the performance ending the prior fiscal year, which is June 30th. They're evaluated, that compensation adjustment is based on their attainment of a set of commitments that they make, that they agree to with their manager and that are approved each year. So. And that's performance relative to their peers in that same level band. Pretty simple. They are eligible for an annual bonus of up to 20% of their base salary. That's also paid out on September 15th, and it's based on that performance of the previous year. And then they're also eligible for a stock award based on their performance. And again, the performance is based on their commitments. So. Always a great conversation to have with just about any Microsoft employee is what's on their commitment sheet. That's an open conversation that a lot of employees are willing to share with you.
Should certainly happen more than twice a year, which is exactly in the worst case, but yeah.
All right, so that's kind of the engineering groups. That makes sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Also, how you're incented. I think that was super important.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, so now let's move to the field sales and marketing organization, that second division that we talked about at the beginning. So the field, as I mentioned earlier, are first pivoted and organized by geography. And by the geography, we've broken our worldwide geography into 13 regions. You can see the 13 regions on the slide here. I've noted also that where their headquarters are located. One interesting note here is 60% of our revenue is now coming from outside of the United States, which is significant, and clearly that's our big growth area as well from a year-over-year growth. So within a geography, within an area, then it's down to a country. And every country that Microsoft does business in has a country manager. And that country manager is the king of the castle for their geography. Everything rolls up to him or her, and they're accountable for everything that happens within that geography. So this is the typical subsidiary structure that a country manager has. They have the marketing and sales, marketing and operations group, M&O. These are consist of product managers that are aligned to the engineering groups that we talked about earlier. Right. So they're like the local catchers of the worldwide marketing plans for those products. So they're responsible for creating the marketing plan, the sales plan, the channel strategy, et cetera, for that product within that geography. The developer platform evangelism team, DPE, is responsible for driving platform adoption among our developer community, IT pros, students, and startups. Advertising and online deals with our consumer groups and looking for our advertising opportunities. Mm-hmm. The consumer channels group is highly focused on end consumers and how to market and sell our products and services that are targeted at end consumers. Then we move up to our commercial side, where there's the SMSMP group, which is our SMB to mid-market. And we'll talk much more about SMSMP. And then finally, we have public sector and EPG, our mm-hmm. largest and most important customers from a revenue standpoint.
Yeah, I think to be plugged into the machine, you've got to understand acronyms, whether it's a small to medium-sized business, enterprise, group, what EPG?
Enterprise and Partner Group. Yep.
There you go. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So, all right.
Yep.
Good.
So the typical roles in the subsidiary are the product marketing manager, as we talked about. That's within that M&O organization. Mm-hmm. The audience marketing manager, which is in the DPE organization, and then the account manager is a key role that lives within the SMSMP or EPG and public sector groups. And then we'll talk about those, the account manager and the solution sales specialist and the services manager. But those last three roles are really the key selling roles right. within the field organization. So the typical comp plan then, in addition to the C plan, identical structure to what we talked about earlier for the engineering groups, there's a new compensation plan for the field sales and marketing organization. It's specifically those that are in a sales role. Mm-hmm. These are called S plans.
Yeah,
sales
carry plans. A quota. Yeah, I love it.
So
yeah.
Their primary thing is a quota that's established for them based on the objectives of the product, year-over-year growth, the penetration in that particular market segment. As you can imagine, a very complicated formula to arrive at a per person quota, but everybody gets a quota on a sales plan, mm-hmm. and they're evaluated against that sales plan. And once they hit their quota, there's incentives to even outperform those
yeah,
quotas
accelerators.
With accelerators.
Yes,
exactly.
We all have a number. That's how we.
They all have a number.
Yeah.
So you can see on the little. Graph on the right hand side, the typical construct of a sales plan. They vary widely. There's mm-hmm. just a ton of different sales plans depending on the maturity of the rep, the experience mm-hmm. level of the rep, the types of customers they have, etc. This is a standard type of mm-hmm. of construct where 60% is base, 30% is what we call revenue based incentive RBI, mm-hmm. where that's attainment against the quota. And then 10% is their commitments, just similar to what we talked about with the engineering mm-hmm. group. Mm-hmm. So as you can see, just by looking at that if a sales rep doesn't meet their revenue quota, they're not going to be doing very well financially.
Right.
So first objective, primary objective of any sales rep within Microsoft is to hit their quota.
Yep.
Once they hit their quota, then they'll start looking at some of their commitments and commitment-based incentives to see what else they can do to drive the maximum compensation for the year.
I think that's well articulated. Yep. Yeah.
So, and these are the typical types of commitments that they have on the CBI side: winning new customers, innovating, driving satisfaction, etc. So anything non-sales related, non-opportunity related for a sales rep that you might want to have a discussion with, their objective primarily is to get their quota. Retired
you'd have
first.
To tie it to retiring quota or that sort of long-term building the pipe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Now, the issues that a subsidiary would care about, as someone in the subsidiary, and especially the country manager, is obviously revenue. Mm-hmm. And then what we call contribution margin, or what the net return is for a country manager. Now, a country manager has a tremendous amount of discretion. They can hire heads, they can invest in programs, they can do whatever they want as long as they're hitting their contribution margin commitment. Mm-hmm. Similar to a sales rep, if a country manager isn't hitting their top line and hitting their contribution margin, they're not going to do very well from a performance review standpoint and from a scorecarding perspective. So their primary objectives is hit the top line and hit my contribution margin. So one thing to note from an ISV or partner perspective is towards the end of the fiscal year, if the subsidiary is not meeting their contribution margin, you're going to see some cutbacks in some non-revenue producing programs potentially mm-hmm. in order for them to hit their contribution margin. So mm-hmm. that's just the way it is. So from a timing perspective, it's important that you know that might be considered some short-term thinking, but it's to try and get to that contribution margin that they've committed to on behalf of the company.
And from a calendar year perspective, maybe it's not good to engage the country manager in essentially June to July.
Yeah, I know I've gotten a lot of complaints or concerns from partners about, we're in the April, May, June timeframe, and some programs that they had been enjoying for the bulk of the fiscal year are now being cut back or eliminated for mm-hmm. the rest of the year. That's a symptom that the country manager is really trying to hit their contribution margin commitment back to the company.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if you've worked at all with Microsoft, you know we have a scorecard culture.
Yeah.
And the king of all scorecards within the company is the subsidiary scorecard. This is the report card for the entire country. And I wanted to put on here what the FY14 subsidiary scorecard looks like, because the key thing, if you think about it, is if a country manager is highly incented from a personal earnings perspective, mm-hmm. what the revenue and contribution margin is, and everybody in the sales side of the house is also concerned about top line revenue and hitting their quota, that could be the entire focus of the organization, is just hitting those top line and contribution margins. And as such, they could just focus on the most profitable products, the most easy to sell products. Mm-hmm. So the scorecard is intended to kind of balance that out and mm-hmm. make sure that there's activities also focused on our emerging businesses mm-hmm. and emerging products and some of the more broader programs that are available. So you'll see that throughout the subsidiary scorecard, how that aligns.
Yeah, it was interesting in the polls that most of our ISVs sell more on-premises, maybe more of our more traditional higher margin offerings at the
correct.
Moment. Yeah.
And yet the scorecard is really focused on driving some of those emerging businesses mm-hmm. like Azure as an example. All right, so that's the field sales and marketing organization. Now, one of the important things to understand about how that organization goes to market is how we think about and segment customers.
All right.
So for customers, the first one is our consumer segment, and this is primarily focused on, as we mentioned earlier, about the consumer channels group. So this is the small office, home office, 1 to 2 PCs. There's just a ton of customers in this segment, 1.2 billion customers in this segment. And the channel that we use to reach those consumers is retail. Now, primarily through our retail channels, partners like Best Buy and so on. The next segment up is small business and mid-market, and this is our SMSMP group is responsible for this segment. We consider small business under 25 PCs, mm-hmm. So anywhere from 1 to 49 employees. There's about 40 million customers in this space. And the primary license that we sell our software to that segment is open, and we'll talk about open here in a minute.
Okay.
And then mid-market, there's some sub-segments in that segment as well. But this is from 25 to 500 PCs. There's 1.2 million customers in this space, and that's also At some point, at about 250 PCs and above, we sell the next license type up, which is an enterprise agreement. But largely open is our license agreement for mid-market. And then finally, we have the enterprise and partner group, EPG. We also have sub-segments there between corporate, major, and public sector. You can see the size and the number of employees that are there. These are the very largest customers. You can, you, if you're in a specific geography, you could probably name them.
Sure.
They're the name brand customers in the local markets. And our primary licensing vehicle is an enterprise agreement for this segment. That all make sense?
No, I think it makes sense. So it's by size of company, it's by geo. It's by even country, let alone region. Certain time of year, you want to be careful about. But all right, I'm tracking, and it's good to hear you articulate it. I'm not seeing any questions come in. Do feel free to chime in with those questions. But so far, I'm tracking. I like hearing you say it. It's things I should know. But yeah, I get it.
And I know licensing is always a kind of a third rail topic where it's really difficult to get into. But I did think that it would be important to cover at a minimum just the basics of licensing. Because if you're plugging into the Microsoft sales machine, you kind of have to understand basically what we're trying to sell. And what we're trying to sell is volume licensing, and especially to our larger customers. So when I prepared this deck, I went out to find a basic licensing 101.
How large was that?
About 134 slides.
Wow. Okay.
So we tried to distill it down. There's plenty of training available to really dive in if anyone is interested in getting into the real nitty-gritty of licensing. But at a high level, I just want to cover it so we have a basis of understanding. So there are basically four ways to buy a license through Microsoft. So four ways to get our software. Mm-hmm. One is just to buy the full package product in the retail channel. And that's primarily our one to two customers go walk in Best Buy or buy it online and have it shipped through Amazon or whatever. That's the full package product. Obviously, online services now are available through Office 365. Then with a new PC, when you buy a PC, it's preloaded with an operating system and potentially Office and some other software, so you can also buy it that way. And then volume licensing is the last piece, and that's the one piece I want to drill into just for a second.
Sure.
So volume licensing, there's basically two, now I'm oversimplifying here again.
There's time
multiple
is fine.
Dimensions
yeah.
here,
sure.
but basically there's open, which is for under 250 seats, so over 5 and under 250 seats. Mm-hmm. That's, we sell open. And we sell open through a set of value-added resellers that work through distributors. So it's a classic tier distribution model for open. If you're over 250 seats, then it makes sense economically to sign for a customer to sign an enterprise agreement, because an enterprise agreement has discounts related to the volume that you acquire. Open is also a discount from retail, so it's a tiered pricing model. And the larger the customer, the more custom negotiated deal it is for that enterprise agreement. Enterprise agreements are sold through a channel that we call, well, we used to call them large account resellers. Now we've changed the name to LSPs or licensing specialist partners.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah. So the LSPs are the ones primarily responsible for negotiating the terms and conditions of these enterprise agreements. Very small set of customers are negotiating directly with Microsoft, but that's a very rare exception. Most of them are run through the LSPs, and even when we do sign one of those direct agreements, it's executed through an LSP. So this is it's a three-year term. They pay annually in installments on those agreements. The enterprise agreement is the ultimate outcome that any account manager wants to achieve with one of their accounts. So it's important for ISVs to understand that and understand where the customer is at with respect to their enterprise agreement status with Microsoft. So this is kind of a high-level view of what an enterprise agreement lifecycle looks like when we're selling the agreement. They're committing to use and deploy X number of Microsoft seats of whatever product. Then we deploy it. They're using it. The account manager can engage and upsell and sell additional copies. They can maintain that agreement. And the true-up phase is an interesting one. As you can imagine, when a customer signs an enterprise agreement, they're fairly conservative on the number of licenses they'll need. And a true-up period is where they true it up to the actual usage. So it's usually an uptick for the account manager in that process. So the ISV needs to understand where the customer is in that EAA lifecycle.
Yes.
And they should feel free to ask the enterprise customer what the status is of their enterprise agreement. Okay, so connecting the dots. This is putting it all together.
Yeah, well, all right.
So in our customer segments, we have major enterprise accounts. They sell an EA. We either sell direct or through an LSP. And the type of partners that we work with for major accounts are Global Alliance and industry ISVs. In corporate, it's much the same. Here we also use national SIs and national ISVs that we have a relationship with. And then in mid-market, there's a type of volume license agreement called select. So they're either an enterprise or a select agreement, also sold through an LAR or LSP, and we use national and local SIs and even local ISVs in this case. And then in small business is completely partner-led. There is a small amount of direct sales that we do of some of our online products, but for the most part, it's led by VARs, and VARs are critically important for us in the small business space. So we sell through that tiered distribution model, like I mentioned, with distributors and VARs. So that's how it all kind of maps together.
So knowing how Microsoft sellers are incented, knowing the cycle, which typically had been a three-year cycle for EA, and I think, again, the kind of release or cadence of our products will churn that a little.
So it's
also the size of the, if I'm an ISV, what I'm selling in terms of how large of an audience. Is it for an enterprise customer, a small business, a medium? I mean, these are kind of the questions that you need to ask,
yes.
It sounds like.
Yep, and an ISV, when they're engaging with a customer, especially in the large corporate or major enterprise segment that we have, as they're qualifying that opportunity, they should definitely find out what the status of that customer's EA is. Mm-hmm. Do they have an EA?
Mm-hmm.
Are they first year into it? Are they about to renew it? Are they licensed for the software that would be pulled, the Microsoft software that would be pulled through with that ISV solution? Knowing all that really helps qualify the opportunity, so when they have the conversation with the Microsoft account rep, they know exactly where they stand.
Okay. And then from all up, the account rep is also now selling more Windows Azure, more Office 365, even devices are kind of a new approach as well, so there's some change there.
Correct. Yeah. And just really understanding where the customer is at, you know exactly when to pull the Microsoft account rep in to help you close that deal. They know exactly where they're at, because you can imagine if the account managers involved in selling the EA or renewing the EA and that they're at a critical negotiation point, they're probably not going to want to introduce some risk into the equation and have an ISV step in at that point. But if the customer has committed to Azure, mm-hmm. on their EA they agree when they sign the EA that they're going to use up to, say, $25,000 worth of Azure,
mm-hmm.
and they're at near the end of that three-year cycle and they haven't used that commitment, absolutely that account manager would be very interested in talking with an ISV has a Azure-based solution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Makes sense, yeah. So, no, after you.
No, so what we did, we created a video of a real case study featuring an ISV, and ironically, this video was produced for Microsoft's internal sales organization. This wasn't intended to be shown to partners, but I wanted to show it as an illustration of how this really fits all together and pieces together in an actual sales co-selling type of scenario.
All right, well, let's roll tape. We'll be right back.
Towers Watson is a global consulting firm with two areas of specialty. One is HR and benefits consulting, and the other is consulting in risk to the financial services industry. We are a company with revenues above $4 billion a year. Our flagship product for modelling life insurance risk is called Moses. One of the key requirements of Moses is to have huge power available to run the models. The next generation of power delivery is clearly in the cloud with Microsoft Azure.
I think the key element of this is that Towers Watson are driving big compute. They're driving HPC grids, which is driving large compute cycles onto Azure. And therefore, with their business relationships and our IT relationships, together, we can secure significant Azure revenue.
So as we think about Burst Azure, we really talk about a game-changing situation for the insurance industry. Insurance is a numbers game, and the better your calculations, the better your algorithms, the more competitive you will be in the marketplace. The ability to go to cloud and to burst to that enormous compute power allows insurance companies to be that much more competitive.
We quickly discovered from both the Towers Watson regional sales manager and the UK Microsoft account team that there was a specific requirement for additional compute power to run their Moses models.
Towers Watson will deliver to our clients a fully tested, fully warranted Towers Watson Moses to Azure interface. And we will take the license for that piece of software. But we believe that the license for Azure should come straight to the Microsoft sales teams.
So at this stage, we originally started out with looking at a $25,000 Azure EA commit. We've now expanded that to a six-figure sum of over $100,000. And that includes not only compute for Moses Azure, but also to look at storage options for the client and a multitude of use cases within this organization.
So we've worked really closely with the Towers Watson team to develop a really robust global pipeline. We have over 50 opportunities in that pipeline. And what's exciting about Towers Watson is that they're not selling small deals. Their deals are well over $100,000, which gives us the opportunity to retire a significant part of our Azure quota with each Towers Watson deal.
I engage with Towers Watson through their regional sales manager as they are regularly seeing their clients and regularly seeing the business users. And therefore, I'm quickly building a pipeline off the back of their pipeline. What this means for me is that I have now three major opportunities with British life insurance organisations to use Moses Azure. The key elements of this are, number one, I can retire an Azure EA. I can secure revenue. Number two, they're incentivized to drive Azure wins. And number three, it's a partnership. They're going to help me close deals.
Okay, so what we saw in that video, just to recap, is that the ISV had a solution that was built on Azure, and that helps the Microsoft Azure solution sales specialist retire his Azure quota, as well as the Microsoft account reps retire their Azure quota. It was also targeted, their solution, the Towers Watson solution, was targeted at one of our targeted industries, which we'll talk about in a minute. And then it's a good illustration of a true win-win, where there's a partnership on each side. There's revenue to be had for Microsoft, and there's revenue to be had for the partner, Towers Watson, with their solution. And then finally, it's really, their solution is clearly targeted at one of our enterprise segments, where we do have direct selling resources that can assist the partner in closing those deals.
All right, well, so we had a video, that was great, and that's available. What better to actually have an actual seller in the audience? So while the video was running, we brought in account manager David Primrose. David, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, good to have you here. Now, you're
great
based
to be
out
here.
Of Southern California, correct?
Southern California, I'm a major account manager.
All right, and you know Arnie, so you guys have been at it for a while. All right, great. So now that we've got a live person in, lead away. What are the things that people should know?
Well, David, when you're selling, what kind of resources do you have available to you other than yourself in penetrating a customer account?
You bet. So when I'm engaging my accounts, I have not only members of my own ATU, which is the team that I'm a part of, my territory team, but I also have the STU, that's the technical unit that backs me up. Those are solution specialists, technical professionals, and solution sellers. So if there's a particular product that I need to go super deep in and I cover all the products from my accounts, then the way I would do that is I would call in that technical specialist and that solution specialist to help me out. And then there's also the partner account unit, and that they also help me. And I would say in the last 30 days, I've probably spoken to six ISVs. And right now, I'm actually in pursuit of one of those ISVs for a particular project that I need to work on, very mission critical to me. And so oftentimes, I'll reach out to my partner or counterparts and ask them to make an introduction. Or likewise, sometimes the ISVs will come through them and get introduced to me that way.
Okay, so it's pretty clear from what you just described, then the way to for an ISV to connect into an account team is through the PTU. Is that correct?
That's by far the best way. I'm not going to say that if somebody reaches out to me, I don't turn them down. But as you've already mentioned in your series already, given that time of year, I might be super heads down, and I might not actually see that mail in a daily fashion. So the best way would be through the partner team. But if this is urgent, or if you've got a need to speak with me, reach out to me. I'm not going to turn it away. Especially if there's business involved.
Well, yeah, it's all about it. Well, so Fred had a question, which I think we're going to address in a slide, but it's how do they get to you? It sounds like there is urgency on your side because you've got to hit a number to talk to them. And so they're anxious to talk to you again. Is how do we make that pairing?
Yeah, so a couple of things. We want to be respectful of the ISVs. You're trying to run a business. We want you to grow that business. We want you to be majorly successful. When you're successful, we're successful. I need ISVs. I need you. I need you to be successful, and I need to be able to plug you into my accounts, either you proactively reaching out to me or through the partner community, or me actually reaching out to you and saying, I need your help. It really is a partnership here. And so the way this is going to work is I'm going to find an opportunity, and I'm going to be looking for an ISV to plug in. And by the same token, you're looking for an opportunity to work with me, and we're looking for a match there. Mm-hmm. And I think you guys have accurately said that normally that's just a normal course of business, and it happens. And oftentimes the partner guys will broker that because they see my schedule and they know the ISV schedule. Mm-hmm. So just from a standpoint of getting us together in our crazy schedules, that just works well. But by the same token, we also want to make sure that we plug you into where you're going to be successful. And so there's also a context there. And that context is depending on the year, time of year.
So is it find me a partner at Microsoft? I mean, how do we connect the dots?
You want to cover that?
Yeah, you bet. So if I've heard of a particular ISV application, I will go to Keith Giberson is my partner guy. I always go to Keith. I'll go to Keith, I flip him an email, and I say, please help me understand how to get in touch with this
Is Keith, you mentioned a couple things here. Mm-hmm. There's a PTU lead, there's a PAM, and then there's something called the Industry Market Development Manager. I think that's a key role that you could probably explain.
You bet. So in this case, Keith is my partner account manager that I work with, and that's more of a historical thing than anything else. But there's also these industry managers, and it's really important that ISVs, for you to know, that we also serve our market via industry. And those are like manufacturing, retail, financial services. You saw the video around financial services and media. And then there's also public sector. And in my particular case, I'm focused predominantly on life sciences, which is in healthcare. I'm 100% commercial, but actually the healthcare team at some level rolls up into public sector, mm-hmm. which is education and government as well.
So just as we saw in the video, the ISVs that are best positioned to plug into at least the enterprise sales machine are those that have a solution that's enterprise scalable,
right?
That they have a track record or a history of in selling to enterprise.
Yep.
That's in one of our targeted verticals.
That helps.
Is that correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then if they have a good relationship with the industry market development manager or the PAM for the area.
That always helps, and that would make it more successful. Our goal is to make it easy for you, not harder for you, because we both want to get to a sale as seamlessly and as fluidly as we can. And so this is just a mechanism that we've set up to kind of help us respect your time while at the same time recognizing that sometimes, like when you're trying to, you've sold a big deal and your customer is stringing you out to net 60, you're not going to be wanting to talk about marketing, you're going to want to talk about collecting. And given, if you just flip that around, on my world, certain times of the year, I'm really focused on a couple of certain things that I got to hit. It's either scorecard, I got to hit a scorecard metric. If you're in that metric, I'm going to be all over you because I need your help. Same way with quota. You heard Will say, I got to meet quota. Do I have to meet quota? It's big time. Yeah. I'm going to be seriously focused on that. And by the same token, if I can help you make money in the process, I'm all about that too.
Great.
So yeah, there's a cadence throughout the year where you are in some ways almost not reactive, but reacting to what's bearing down on you And the goal is to be more proactive as an ISV to then say, all right, I know my solution, I know my vertical, I know my geo, and I know, again, who to contact, sort of plug in at the right time for that EA renewal or
that's,
what it may
that's
be.
Perfect. Yep. So what Dave and I, everybody loves lists, right? And,
yeah.
And so we put together five tips to really help ISVs plug into this Microsoft sales machine. And the first I want to touch on, I know we had a question in the queue that asked this sort of question as well. Getting to gold within the Microsoft Partner Network is kind of the keys to the kingdom in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. It's your ticket to entry. Because if you're not a gold partner, you miss out on a tremendous number of benefits. One of those benefits that we just introduced this fiscal year is an MPN concierge, which helps navigate Microsoft, helps untangle this web that we've just gone through in a blitzkrieg hour. Mm-hmm. They will help you find the right people, connect you to the right programs, find out where things are at, how to access your benefits, help renew your membership, what are the requirements, etc. So you get that benefit when you get a gold competency. There are a number of other benefits that you get, including eligibility for a partner account manager. So if you're not gold today, step one, get to gold. That's a critically important step.
It really is, because if you think about it, as a major account manager, I have five accounts. And so my entire quota of this year approaching $30 million has to come from those five accounts. So if I'm going to plug an ISV in, I've got to know that I can take that risk. And with a gold certification, I know that they've got the resources to be able to take the risk. And I know my customer then can rely on me to be able to recommend them, because we know that they're going to be able to have the staying power to operate in an enterprise environment. So getting that gold really helps us help you.
You want to cover number two?
Sure. And Azure enable your application. Can't tell you how fast all of my customers are going to the cloud, as fast as they can. It's kind of like a boat. Gaining water, they're bailing as fast as they can, and they're getting rid of IT stuff and getting it to the cloud. So the faster you can get to the cloud, the faster we can have that ongoing conversation around selling your ISV application into enterprises.
Yeah, yesterday we talked. You talked about this log jam that's being formed with your
sure.
customers
yes.
that are just
yes.
the pressure is just building to move to the cloud. Everybody, every IT group in the world is knows that they have to move to the cloud, and they're just waiting for the breakthroughs to make that happen.
Yes. So yesterday when we were discussing, and I'm happy to share this with all my ISV friends, we at Microsoft find that there's a little bit of a people sitting at the top of the funnel, and as they flow down the funnel, that's where the sales happen. So there's kind of all jammed up here at the top of the funnel, and they haven't even jumped in yet. And so what we need to do, both of us, is we need to make it much more fluid and easy for them to feel comfortable just diving in to that funnel and doing consummating a sale for both of us. And so that's what we're going to be focused on. And by having your app enabled in Azure, it makes it easier for them to have that flow through. And we want a lot of flow, and we want a lot of velocity, because that's what puts money in both of our pockets.
There's a different way that Azure is compensated versus an on-premise exchange, what have you. So I think that there's a lot of net new, not only for the customer in terms of ripping out IT or that graceful way to do it, mm-hmm. but also how you're going to hit that $30 million number at maybe much smaller increments, but at higher volume.
There is definitely that, and that's where also the scorecard comes in, because
yeah.
the scorecard helps.
Yeah, helps true it, up. It,
even though the Azure revenue may not be that strong initially, and it's mm-hmm. not going to replace an EA at a couple of million dollars per on an enterprise account, here's what it is going to do. It's going to get us locked in for the future, and
right.
it is going to start a service that is like clipping coupons. As long as we do our job, as long as the apps work, as long as that we're growing and enhancing the apps, as long as we're getting to more of a platform play, where they just, you know, they just sign up for your app and it just happens to run on our platform, boy, that's golden, because then the meter just clicking. And gradually we're going to make that entire transition as a company, and obviously we want you to make that transition with us.
And we actually, that's a great point, David, because we really would love to see ISV solutions built in a SaaS environment using Azure, because of the stickiness that you mentioned earlier. We know line of business applications are extremely sticky especially with our enterprise customers. And if it's serving their needs and continuing to evolve using a cloud-based enhancement process where it's just continually updating and getting better and better and better, there's no reason for that customer to rip that out. And conversely, there's a lot of features and functions available in a SaaS environment for ISVs that they can really accelerate their time to market and take advantage of our platform as it evolves as well.
Yeah. A lot of traditional roles changing, both within Microsoft and in the ISV or partner community.
Absolutely.
And it's a great way to the future, though. So I'd be running towards it if I were you.
All right.
And then, Will, you mentioned this earlier, but number three talks about this. Is my number one recommendation for an ISV that's just entering into this space is really understand and document, and I mean literally document, what their solution is targeted, what customer segment their customer their solution is targeted at, the unique value that it provides, why it's better and different than any other solution provider, that is targeted at a specific vertical. The more specific that it can get, the better, because it helps account managers really understand. All right, I got it. I know right the type of scenario that this fits in. The worst case, the opposite is. My solution applies to every customer segment. Yeah. It's a horizontal solution.
So, let me jump in on that for a second. So, one of my customers, one of my five customers, is one of the largest generics manufacturers in the U.S. And I happened to be walking into their building when the CEO was walking out. Now, if I didn't have a presentation in my mind of what I wanted to say to him, should I run into him in a totally bizarre situation? I would never have been able to make the connection. But because I was able, because I knew that and I prepared it, I knew what the unique value I wanted to present to him. When he was walking out as I'm walking in, I could say, aren't you Mr. So-and-so? Here's who I am. I'm Dave Primrose with Microsoft. I'm your Microsoft account rep. And I then could hit him about two or three key points which I knew were of maximal value to him. And in the same way, you want your, quote, elevator pitch to have the maximum bang for the buck so that we know exactly what you do and where you do it and where your strengths are, because that is what is going to make you successful. Less is more in this case. Everybody comes to us and tells us that they can do everything, okay? But when everybody can do everything, it makes it really hard to stick out. So tell us what you can do really well, and then it gives us the greatest opportunity to plug you in where it matters.
Okay, you want to cover four, David?
Sure. The best time to collaborate is after you've qualified the opportunity. So the important thing is that in respect of your time and in respect of the velocity that we have to run on our side, what works for us both is for you to have either call me ahead of time and say, I don't know anything about this account, but I really think they're a good candidate for my product. Tell me what you would recommend I do to even get on the radar map. Okay, that's a better conversation than trying to tell me why I should introduce you, because I may not know the opportunity, I may not have access to the opportunity, there's a lot of other issues. So if you can get in and start to qualify based on the merit of your application, then it allows me then to go in and actually add more wood to the fire to really get you where you need to go. It's not saying I can't help you beforehand, but what I can't do is just have a completely we don't exactly know where we're going conversation. It's a question of triage. We all have so much time in the day and we've got to put as much wood behind the arrow as possible. And so if you can tell me you've got an opportunity, then I can help you with it. Tell me you don't have an opportunity, then I can help point you in the right direction and then steer you so that you can kind of get one going.
And from what I've heard, David, tell me if this is right or not, but in talking with other Microsoft account managers, a common mistake ISVs make when they have generated the opportunity within one of our accounts, they either bring us in way too late, where we're already well down the path with another partner potentially, or a competitor is in there and well down the path, so it's really impossible for us to rescue it,
right.
Or it's way too early where there's really nothing we can do and nothing we can help with because it's not qualified. The ISV doesn't know if there's even budget. Is this a real project or not? So the best time is once they've qualified that opportunity, really understand, hey, this is real. We've got budget. I've got a stakeholder. I need Microsoft's help to get this thing closed.
You bet. So let me just roll through a couple. Those are scenario plays, right? Mm-hmm. So let's roll a couple through those scenarios. The partner manager, one of the partner guys, will call me and say, I have this ISV, they'd like to meet with you, they think they have an opportunity at one of your accounts, can we have a dialogue? I'm always happy to do that. Mm-hmm. We sit down, we compare notes, I tell them what I know, I tell them what I don't know, I tell them what maybe I can go find out, and then that's the end of it because we need to do more work. Other times, they have actually, one of the ISVs that I spoke with this month, they've already been out to my customer. They already know that there's an opportunity. What they want to know is the opportunity real? Okay? And so what I'm able to do is go to my contacts. In fact, I did this last night.
Yeah, you shared an email about this today.
I went to ISV contacted me. The RFP came to them on Friday night. They reached out to me. I spoke with them on Monday. We had another follow-up phone call Tuesday. I said that I would find out information from the customer, and I got it verified that it is a budgeted opportunity, and we're good to go. So now it's a question of what do we need to put more resources behind this ISV in order for them to be successful. That's exactly the way it should work.
Perfect scenario. Yep.
We're getting some questions. Before, I don't know if you want to go to five and then go back to the questions, or if you want to take it now.
Are the questions related to the first four? Or we could drain
more
five?
More generally. Let's drain five.
Okay.
So the last thing is that EAs are three-year agreements. I mean, EA, we view as it's our big payday as a company, but it's also kind of the start of the relationship. And so know where we are in that three-year cycle, because obviously if we're at the end of that cycle, what we're mostly focused on is renewing that EA, okay? And probably adding Azure to it. If it's at the beginning of the cycle and we've just closed one, that's probably a really good opportunity to come in and be able to state your case of how when you work on our platform, you add value to that customer. And it makes it easier for us. We have more time to work with you. So just keep that in mind. But always call. Operators are standing by.
Well, okay. So again, who do I call? What's that number? But
There's a couple of things on that score specifically. Once a partner obtains a gold competency, they are not only eligible for this concierge service that I talked about before, but if they're not assigned a Microsoft Partner Account Manager, which is rare. I mean, it's very rare, especially within DPE and for ISVs. They will be assigned a telephone-based account specialist, a TPAS agent, and that TPAS agent can be that 1-800 number that's a named resource that they can contact and they can help navigate or find the right people or give them guidance on the next steps. So that is a key resource for them.
So yes, every district in the United States has a partner team. And on that partner team are individuals. You need to get with one of those individuals, explain who you are and where you want to go, and ask them for assistance to do that. Okay? Cool. And I'll just say this. My alias is David PRI. As long as you don't totally flood me with questions, I'm always happy to help my ISV brethren out and help move you towards your goal. Because if you win, I win.
All right. So what are some of the questions?
You guys have been very absorbing this, so please hit us with those questions if you want. I think this ties back to almost slide 22 where the question comes in, hey, you talked about the larger accounts. As you go down in terms of company size, what are some of the approach? I'm paraphrasing it poorly.
I think I get it. How do they tie in at a smaller company level?
Yeah.
The key message here for the smaller, especially let's talk about the mid-market space. The further you move down our customer segment tree, the more we are reliant on partners to lead the conversation and lead the opportunity. And the resources begin to, on the Microsoft side, begin to really scale out. At the lower end, as an example, lower end of mid-market, I think it's like 1 to 200 or something, some account ratio.
At least.
It's crazy large. So the main, we are heavily reliant on the partner to be partner-led with that. Now, we do offer a number of programs and benefits that to try and help make our partners more successful, like Microsoft Go-to-Market Services. They are package campaigns and search engine optimization tools and other ways to make you more successful and help you generate more leads. And those benefits are generally tiered, so you get the highest level benefits at the gold level.
And to one of our 5 points, if you've made your value proposition really crisp, you can pitch that rep who has those 200 accounts and say, if you run into these kind of opportunities, here's my little box. If it lands in there, please call me. Here's my business card. That will work because we will remember those kinds of things because they're specific and they're unique and we'll remember that because we don't know if the next call is going to require that.
Yep, and then we do offer marketplaces. If you have a Windows 8 and a Windows Phone, those are obvious and marketplaces that we now offer to application providers. There's also Pinpoint as a marketplace. Mm-hmm. There's been some interesting changes recently with Pinpoint, and I think we'll see quite a bit of investment and enhancement to Pinpoint in the coming year.
Previous event yesterday, that Pinpoint was brought up. I think CRM, Office 365, those are big plays, and maybe in that smaller.
Absolutely. Smaller and then area. The real key within the SMB segment in particular, if you're an ISV that has a solution that requires a channel sell, is to connect with our VAR SI partner organization. I mean, there are and you can find them either through Pinpoint or there's a couple of P2P partner-to-partner connection tools that we have and programs that we have, including Partner Link. So getting those connections and building your channel and having those VARs carry your message is how Microsoft goes to market as the world's largest ISV. So other ISVs should plug into that VAR network as well.
And if I can just make one comment, in the small and medium business space, those owners usually buy direct. So they may have one person working with you on their staff, but they're going to buy. That's even more reason why your pitch needs to be really refined, because that owner is investing his own personal money in your ISV solution. So it's got to be good. So he's going to be looking for risk mitigation. So if you're super crisp and hardcore about what the value is, your chance of getting a sale is going to be greater. And then pitching your solution to those areas where those kind of owners congregate is a huge opportunity for you.
All right, well, I'm going to be careful of total time. We should probably wrap up. I know there's maybe one more slide you wanted to cover, but in general, just that wrap up. What are we going to do different tomorrow based on what we've heard today?
Yeah, so just to kind of summarize everything that we talked about today. So from an organizational structure, think about Microsoft as three big divisions. There's the engineering group, the field sales and marketing, and the shared services group. That's really, to get your head around this monolith that's Microsoft, that's a good way to think about it. So the engineering groups, totally product focused. That's all they care about. So if you're a Microsoft ISV in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and you have an opportunity at a pharmaceutical account, talking to the product manager about that that's a mismatch of what their interests are and what they're compensated on with what you're asking about. So aligning your asks and will help you be more respectful of your time and their time to getting that right.
So back to the PTU, right? I mean, that's where you want to go.
For the enterprise segment, for sure. So sales teams then again are organized first by geo and then by the customer segment. So zeroing in on the right person is the key to success. We scale through partners. I think that's a key message that we wanted to leave everyone with. And really, the 1-to-5, 1-to-1, 1-to-2 kind of account ratio is at a very, very largest customer segments. So if your solution doesn't have a track record or isn't designed or architected to sell into that space, you're going to be wasted effort trying to connect with someone in that account space. If it's primarily a solution targeted at SMB, then it's a more broad scale through our VAR channel. That's the best way to connect. Customer account managers, no offense, are all about the EA. I mean, as we talked about earlier, until they retire their quota, they're kind of diametrically focused on getting that quota retired through their EA renewals.
Yeah, I mean, you want to go next or as we wrap it up?
Yeah, my wrap up is to say, as an ISV, we value you highly. You're super important to us, and we're really proud of you for having your company, so drive hard, and let's go win together.
All right, and for me, what I got is you really need to know your pitch, you really need to know your product so that
more
you can differentiate.
More specific as possible is better. Yep.
Yeah, so that you're not in the noise. All right, well, gentlemen, this has been great. I thank you so much for your time today. I think we're, Ryan, if I'm not mistaken, we're going to go to a additional resources and or poll next. I don't know if we can just go one more.
Yep.
So I think we'd love this to be the beginning of a conversation, right? You got a chance to sit down and hear it from Dave and from Arnie. But I think the key is that you know where to go to get more data points. There are some great multi-day courses where you can really invest some time to really kind of ground what we're discussing now. And then directions at Microsoft, directionsonmicrosoft.com, a great resource as well.
Yeah, that's a third-party resource that, ironically, a lot of Microsoft employees keep track of what's going on at Microsoft through this third-party analyst firm called Directions on Microsoft. So it's a good resource for people.
All right. Well, per David and Arnie, thank you so much for your time today. Great luck in selling in this season, and we look forward to seeing you again soon.